finish all the prokim. We're doing Eichav because Tisha B'Av is on Thursday, next Thursday. But we have Perek Beis, and the idea was last week, for those who were here, what Dudi asked me to do was to take a few psukim and discuss them in what's usually very obscure kind of meanings in Eichav. If you don't spend time preparing it, I would say it's almost impossible to understand what the Navi is trying to impart and what kind of messages they're trying to impart. And as I think I said last week, that it's a prototype for all suffering that the Jewish people will go through throughout Galus, and in a way it also teaches us how to cope with it as well. And today what I'd like to do is at least two psukim and hopefully three. The first one, don't forget, Eichav goes in order of Aleph Beis. You don't really have to number the psukim. I could just tell you, well, you do, because they're not all in. It goes in order of the Aleph Beis. That means the reason why it goes in order of the Aleph Beis is like similar to what Rashi says in the first Rashi in Eicha, is simply because if not for the Jewish people abandoning much of the Torah, then many of the sins of Gilui Arayos, Shfichas Damim, Sinas Chinam wouldn't have happened. And at its core, what happened was they abandoned the Torah, and if you keep the Torah and learning it, then many of the other Averas are kept obey. The Torah, Barasi Yetzahara, Barasi Torah Tavlin, the Gemara teaches us in Kedushin. If you learn the Torah itself, then your day is a much purer day, and your day is a much more productive day in terms of your Avodas Hashem, and generally speaking. And therefore, that's represented by the Aleph Beis in each Perek, or most of the Prakim. Today we're going to do Beis, which is Pasuk Beis, which is Bila Adonai Veloi Chamal, Eis Kol Naos Yaakov, Haras Be'evrasoi, Mivisrei Vas Yudah, Higia La'aretz, Chilel Mamlocheha V'sareha, which means what we're going to focus on is HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed the Na'os Yaakov, the beauty of Yaakov. We're going to discuss what that means with various interpretations from the Gemara and from the Medrash. That's one. Then number two, very in a smaller Dvar Torah, but it connects to the first one, we do Pasuk Tes, which is Tavu Va'aret Sha'areha Ibad V'Shiber Bericheha. The gates of the Beis HaMikdash sunk into the floor, and we're going to discuss what that means in terms of the message we can take from that. And ultimately, we leave off with the pasuk of Ayin, which is pasuk Yud Zayin, Asa Hashem Asher Zaman Bitza Emrasai, which means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has kept all the klalas that he told us in Parshas Bechukosai, and these became true in the times of the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash. And there's a book I have at home. He's a relative of the Sass of a Rebbe. I've just forgot his name momentarily. It's not a very well-known book. He's not a very well-known tzaddik. The person who introduced me to him was Oliver Shalom and Moshe Chaim Brandsdorfer. His name was Ramatl Pogromansky, and he was the Rebbe, the informal Rebbe of Ramadcha Gifter in Tells. He was like I mean this in just a way to explain it. He was like the informal educator in yeshivas in Europe. He was the biggest genius. And every time he came into the yeshiva, people would flock to sit around him. I don't think he had many formal positions. But just by who he was, people came to visit him. And in his book, which is it's not an easy book to read. I think it's translated from Hebrew. He goes through also psukim in terms of the Churban Europe, because he went through the Holocaust and he lived just afterwards. And he explains how the klalas came true in various psukim. And of course, the same is true, it's all the more so true in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. But let's start with one, which is Pasuk Beis. Bila Adonai, v'loi chamal, eis kal ois Yaakov, haras ebrasai, mivitzrei vas yudah higia la'aretz, chilel mamlocheha v'sareha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has destroyed, and he hasn't had any compassion either. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has destroyed, and he's destroyed with no compassion. Perek Beis is a very intense kind of perek, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu many times is represented, so to speak, as the enemy himself. It's a very intense kind of learn. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has destroyed with no compassion at all. What did he destroy with no compassion at all? And presumably, you can destroy with compassion, but he's decided to destroy without compassion. What did he destroy? Eis kol na'os Yaakov. All the beauty, like Naveh, all the beauty of Yaakov, that's what he destroyed, which doesn't really help us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has destroyed without compassion, which doesn't really fit in with how he destroys, as we'll see later on. Normally HaKadosh Baruch Hu's destroying is with compassion. And what did he destroy? Na'os Yaakov. Something of Yaakov, which represents the lower level of the Jewish people. But Na'os, what's Na'os? It says Rashi, I'll tell you what that is. Bate Yaakov, the houses of Yaakov, like Neve Sha'anan. And that's an expression which can be proved grammatically, says the Medrash, in many places. And what does it mean? Amar Reb Hoshea, which is, I presume, is an extended part of Rashi, if it means the same. Tough pay, bate kinesios hayu be Yerushalayim. There were 450 bate shuls in Yerushalayim. Tough pay. 480, sorry. It's a tough pay, bate kinesios hayu be Yerushalayim. V'chal echad, and each one, hayu beis sefer or beis talmud. Each one had a school and a place where they would learn Gemara. Beis Sefer LeMikra, the school that was called for Chumash, or Beis Talmud LeMishnah VeGemara, and the Talmud for Mishnah and Gemara, which is maybe represented in the Churvos Yerushalayim. So the destruction of Yerushalayim wasn't just the Beis HaMikdash. To have 480 Batei Knesias and Batei Midrashas is quite something. I don't know where these are in Yerushalayim, if any, you know, historically people look. The secular historians look for the first synagogue that they find in Greece. I don't know how much the people have found these shuls in Yerushalayim. There's 450. 480, I'm sorry. And there was they learned there as well, and that was the destruction. Bila Hashem v'loi chamal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not only did he destroy the Beis HaMikdash, but all the shuls as well. It's interesting, I'd like to offer like a deeper, not a, maybe a different interpretation, which the Medrash brings as well. There's many Purushim, what Nevei, what Na'os Yaakov actually means. And I'd like to also focus on Bila Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed, v'loi chamal, he had no compassion. And the Medrash tells us that actually these Na'os Yaakov were referring to Talmidei Chachamim specifically. HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed Talmidei Chachamim when he destroyed especially the first Beis HaMikdash. And in the beginning of Perek Beis, the Navi is focusing on the destruction of Talmidei Chachamim. So if you imagine Klal Yisrael, as always, is split between Talmidei Chachamim, Amaratzim, Tzadikim, Rashaim, as it is always. The first thing we're going to focus on after HaKadosh Baruch Hu has told us he's hidden away in a cloud, is what did he destroy? All the rabbis got destroyed. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to focus on that. And much of what I'm going to say, I would say part of it is part of the story in the Gemara and Gittin that we know, and part of it is not. But the focus is here, Na'os Yaakov, says the Medrash, that's referring to Bila Hashem V'loi Chamal, Ein She'eris Ela Tzadikim. These are referring to the Tzadikim of the generation which HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed. Which is in sharp contrast, as Rav Hirsch points out, to the story of Sodom. What happened in Sodom? By Yagesh Abraham, Yom Ha'aftis Bet Tzadik in Russia. Are you going to destroy the Tzadik with the Russia as well? Ula Yesh Chamishim Tzadikim B'Soy Cha'er, the famous dialogue between Avram Avinu and Kadosh Baruch Hu. Maybe there's 50, maybe there's less. And then the Pasuk we say in Yom Nerayim, Chalil Lecha Me'asas Kadavazeh, how can the Hamas Tzadik in Russia, Hashoifet Kol Ha'ares Layasa Mishpat, someone who judges the whole world, when they do, someone who's just, how could you kill tzaddikim as well? Which is what we cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on Yom HaRayim, as coming to Elul, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded to him, there aren't even there until they go down to 10, until eventually Sodom is destroyed. But it's very different to over here. Here you've got the tzaddikim, and a tzaddik by definition is someone who's not doing bad. Not talking about necessarily people who are evil, who are, maybe we'll talk about two-faced tzaddikim in a minute, but for this point of the show, we're talking about tzaddikim. And Nevei Yaakov are the tzaddikim. They're very, very similar to the Nevei of the 480 Batei Knesias. Right, good people. And Kadosh Baruch Hu is focusing on their destruction, which is in sharp contrast to Sodom, where even the Torah itself points out, Chalil Lecha Me'asayis Kadavar Hazeh. Avram Avinu, who understood the ways of Kadosh Baruch Hu, said, obviously Hashem, you would never take a tzaddik to kill with a Russian. And this is the famous question, why would a tzaddik die? And, you know, this is the classic question, but it's maybe taken in a very specific context over here. And there's a Gemara in Shabbos, in Daf Nun Hei, which speaks about HaKadosh Baruch Hu sending Malachim to go and destroy Yerushalayim after the first Beis HaMikdash. And it discusses the Gemara, very interesting question, which is, when do you criticize someone? And it's a question which is very hard, and by no means do I think in this shir I'm going to go to the extent of when you do and when you don't. It's a big halachic question of a chiach techiach, when it applies or when it doesn't. But generally speaking, we have an obligation to tell people what to do. And generally speaking, if we see someone with tefillin, shame my father's not here, with tefillin that are not straight, or if you see someone not keeping Shabbos, you've got to say, in a nice way, right? And you've got to make sure you haven't got your own agenda, which is why Ryako Kamenetsky points out much of the time it's almost impossible to do. But there are some times where you generally don't have an agenda, you don't know the person, you're not a Rav, so you're not gaining any money if he becomes from. I'm probably passive from ever criticizing someone because there's a person on the gears for me. But everyone has a regular job, is a regular pleb. I guess they can, if it's me who's the problem. You go up to the person, you say, excuse me, you have to make a bracha of shahakal. You have to make Berein Afashas. You have to keep Shabbos. There's a Torah. There's 613 mitzvahs. You have to wear a kapel. That's a minhag nowadays. There's a bunch of stuff you've got to do. You can't be lashon.
Why did we wear a kapel? Out of interest. Why did we wear a kapel?
No. You're right. According to Ravadi Yosef, it's simply because there's Maris Ayin. Because most religious and frum people wear kapels nowadays. If you don't wear one, you're perceived as someone who's not so frum. That's the answer. That's the chuvah. Wait. We could do another share on that. It will be after Eicha. I'll just put it this way. I don't think that's why the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Definitely wasn't. I haven't seen the couple. Because if anything, it's the past few hundred years, which our poskim say it's much more important. But either way. One second. So you have an obligation to tell people not to wear a couple, because of course you don't have to. So you've got to tell them take their couples off. And why would they have to wear one? Right now, of course, right? You've got to tell people to keep Shabbos, etc., etc. And generally, you have to do that. And in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells the Malachim, Gabriel, I think, that's, if I understand the Gemara, he says, go down and put a tof, says the Gemara in Shabbos, on the Tzaddikim's head. Tof is my signature, MS, which is the last letter of MS. And that way, when the destructions come about in Yerushalayim, similar to the destructions in Mitzrayim, they'll be saved by this tof, which is on their head. And the Malachim argue back. And similar to the argument we have with Kriyas Yamsuf, Halalu Avodah Zarah, Halalu Avodah Zarah. Say the Malachim to Hashem, why are you saving the Tzaddikim exactly? So Hashem obviously wondering, they're Tzaddikim, why should they be destroyed? And he says, no, Manishtanu Eilim Eili, what's the difference between these two? Hayo V'yodam L'machos V'loi Michu. They never, there was never anything they did that stopped people from doing the Averas. So should you always stop people? Says Tosfos, no. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to them, Malach, yeah, but maybe they thought themselves that no one would listen to them. And maybe that's a legitimate reason not to criticize someone, which is, I think, generally us, especially British people. We never like telling anyone what to do. We just give people polite smiles and that's it. We don't want to intrude on anyone else's territory. Which is why they say Kirov in America is much more successful than here. Well, that's what people say, because everyone's just telling everyone, yeah, you've got to keep Shabbos. We will respect the other person. Don't worry if that's not what you want to do. I'm not going to intrude on you. And with Rabbanim as well, I think it's a similar problem. But anyway, so Akaponim, so Tosfos says, well, in this context, they weren't sure whether people would listen to them or not. And if you're not sure whether people would listen to you or not, then you've still got to, which is very interesting. Says Tosfos, you're right. If you're 100% sure that you know from past experience with this family or you know this person is definitely going to say no, then you should not go near. And the Gemara in Yevamos, I think it's Samach Beis or somewhere there, says clearly that you should definitely not criticize someone if they're not going to listen to you. You'll become a laughing stock. Only criticize a chacham, someone who's actually intelligent, and you show him a pasuk or you show him or her a Shulchan Aruch. And you say, excuse me, presumably you believe there's a God. This is not what you're meant to do. And they can understand that. And you think that maybe growing anyway. Then you say, excuse me, you don't do it. But if someone's in the height, like we discussed last week, of their rishas, and there's the height of enjoying their life, and their head is so full of immorality and avodah zarah, whatever it is, it's not worth going near them. And that's the direction which I've got for many, many years from like Rabbanim, which is the same, which is not worth saying anything, because you'll just become full of yourself. And on the contrary, like, many times Chazal say, better they should sin when they're by mistake rather than when it's on purpose, because then they'll know, and that's better. But in this context, they didn't actually know that would happen, so they could have criticized them, and they should have criticized them, but they didn't criticize them. And eventually, HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes back, and he says to the Malachim, you're right, and therefore they should be destroyed as well. And the Gemara carries on, which is quite scary. The pasuk says, Necheskel mimikdashi tochelu. That means you should start from my Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara says, not, it doesn't mean from the Beis HaMikdash. It means from the Tzaddikim, the Holy Ones. The destruction should start specifically from the Talmidei Chachamim in Yerushalayim, which is how bad it got. So we've gone from Sodom, where Chalil al-Kha, you're not going to kill Tzaddikim with Rishayim as well, of course not. Then we saw that over here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm actually going to save the Tzaddikim. Chalil al-Li, why should I destroy them as well? And the Malachim point out, no one was criticized. No one did anything. Ah, you're going to tell me that they thought they wouldn't be listened to? That's no excuse. Halachically, you have to criticize someone if you have a suffix. That means if you see someone whose talis is completely pasul, or if you see someone who's driving on Shabbos, you don't know they're going to shout at you back. It's likely they don't know. Like when Moshe Sternbuch says, for example, he's got a tshuva, and how relevant it would be in this context in South Africa. When he lived there, he says you can't call up to the Torah someone who's married out. Right? Now you also can't call up someone who's broken Shabbos, who breaks Shabbos publicly as well. I'm talking from memory here, though. It's about 8 years ago. I remember learning that he says that you can differentiate between marrying out and between breaking Shabbos. Even though breaking Shabbos has got many more punishments and worse associations with it, someone who marries out knows they've married out. And they know normally it's a terrible thing to do, but maybe they were tempted or whatever it was. Someone who breaks Shabbos is usually because of Tinik Shanishba much more. I made Kiddush, Chalas, I've got an electric car. What is electricity? Where does it say it in the Torah anyway? And come on, and do I have to listen to the rabbis? And people ask all these questions, which is true. They don't actually associate it with the rebellion. Therefore, he says in his shul, as far as I remember, you can call them up to the Torah. Because not calling up someone who doesn't keep the mitzvahs is because it's disgusting to the Torah. Here, you've got the 613 in front of you, and you're honoring someone who disregards it. But if someone's more doing it out of maybe accidental, they don't really realize as much, then he says in his town, you could call up someone who's Mechal Shabbat, because people don't realize the severity of it. So that kind of person, you've got to go up to them according to Tosfos. You've got to say, excuse me, maybe...
If you tell someone they're wearing their tefillin too low, you don't get a very nice response.
Right. But then I would say, that's why we mentioned you before you came.
They're not wearing tefillin at all if they're not wearing tefillin.
I haven't even started. It's my first point still. So I have gone a bit, maybe it's a bit tangential, but... I would say you're in the case of a suffix then.
Yeah.
Someone, if you say nicely to someone, saying, it's amazing you've come to shul this morning, and I also struggle with my tefillin as well, and mine always fall down on my arm, and anyway, it's hard to do it in the morning in the mitzvah, I think, as far as I know, there is the Sanz Rebbe who says you could put it anywhere on your head. Most of us, it depends.
Yes.
You're right. If the worst way to criticize is lack of knowledge from yourself. I mean, when in my pea-sized brain, I always say all the colors as well. And I try to understand you. Right? Many people who say like you, not everyone does this. There's many possible who say this is what I think, and it's less aggressive to the person. If you say this is asa, you happen to be mekayem in the mitzvah, and you made the bracha levatala, then obviously. But I think there are ways, and I think that case would still be a case of suffix. If you go up to someone and you say, maybe there's a better way to do it, can I move it for you? I think Tosfos Halacha would apply.
But
it's less...
In Yerushalayim you have so many shuls and so many people learning. How is it possible that avevas were committed at all? Because you've got so many people willing to observe Torah.
Is that a question on me or general? Why? No, but we're going to answer that. Fair point.
The history doesn't work.
Afterwards. I'm not actually so sure. Just bear with. And by the way, the way I understand all these halachas, always a majority. It's never all. You're right. It's never all. It's never binary. It's the understanding what the atmosphere, the story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. It means every single person in Yerushalayim was inviting people to their party and saying, I don't like you. It epitomizes what was happening at the time. It's never going to be every single person never said anything to criticize anyone. It's always a grey understanding, but it epitomizes most of the atmosphere of the time. It's like if we look back in 1,000 years' time after Mashiach has come, they say, what was Jewish life like in London in 2023? And there was Chil Shabbos rampant. It's true, but we kept Shabbos. Most Jews are not keeping Shabbos at all. Most Jews are speaking Lashon Hara. There's so many, but still, I never understand this. Maybe I'm wrong. It means absolutely everyone. You see throughout the Rambans, when they came out of Mitzrayim, when there's criticism against Moshe, he pointed, there's always groups of people. And the Pasuk's never referring to everyone. But let's leave that for now. So our Kroponim, they should have criticized. But how does that go back? Rav Hirsch says beautifully, just to finish this off, contrast that to the Pesukim in Bereshis, which we just pointed out, that in Sodom, when they were in Sodom, and Avraham Avinu said, save them, what word does the Pasuk use? Ula yesh chamishin tzadikim besoichae. Maybe there's 50 tzadikim who are amongst the people, who are willing to criticize them because they feel themselves, I'm not so distant from you anyway. And therefore, to sit the whole day and to learn, but to understand that, you know, we're all in the same, we all have Yetzer Haras, that's maybe understandable. But to sit the whole day by yourself and to eat your Shabbos lunch and discuss what you read in the Jewish Chronicle about people out of gold is green and how bad it is, and to say, ah, at least Hashem loves me because I'm the one doing the mitzvahs and my kids are frum and they're in college. That's what the pasuk is referring to. Because you have an achrayus to think about it, to care about it, to criticize gently. However, and that, in the time of Avraham Avinu, he said, maybe there are 50 tzaddikim besoicha'e, where they're able to criticize, where they're feeling on the same level as everyone else. Which is true, because most Jewish people wouldn't eat on Yom Kippur. Most Jewish people wouldn't eat bacon even if they break all the other mitzvahs. Now, what is this element, tiny element of Yiras Shamayim in there for most people? So the way you can understand it, we also break, we do Tshuva on Yom Kippur for a reason. We don't keep all the mitzvahs. So a tzaddik has to think to themselves of someone who's keeping all the mitzvahs, say, listen, I also break a few, you're breaking maybe a few more, we all need it in this story together, so let's grow, that's besoy cha'ir. You recognize you're amongst them, and therefore that gives you the ability maybe to criticize, whereas in Yerushalayim it was the opposite. Is we're the tzaddikim. We don't understand them. We're not going to listen to them. They're not going to listen to us at all. We don't feel anything in common with them. That's when the destruction specifically came about. And that's Neve Yaakov. That's what it means specifically. It means the beauty of Na'os Yaakov. It means the tzaddikim, Umi Megdosha Tachilu, will start from the tzaddikim simply because they felt aloof and they didn't criticize with anyone else. Which is a crazy thought if you think about it a bit deeply. Which means if Hashem has decided whether Mashiach should come now or not, we complain about assimilation and intermarriage, but really it starts from completely with us who are trying to keep the mitzvahs. Do we consider ourselves the frum people or not? Or do we consider ourselves besoy cha'eh and we're willing to assist everyone else in the process? And that could be what would cause the destruction. And if not, if there is any sort of war, we definitely don't want it to start from us. And this is what, that's how extreme it was. HaKadosh Baruch Hu started from the She'eris Yisrael, from the tzaddikim. Which means in Yerushalayim, he had a tzaddik sitting there. He's thinking, he knows about the prophecies of Yirmiyahu. He knows what's going to happen. He keeps all the mitzvahs. He doesn't even speak Lashon Hara properly. He walks to the street, says, "Aich, these goyim of Yidden, what's going to be with them? Ah, the mamash forgotten people. Look at me though." Not in an ego way, but at least we're doing Hashem's will. And then where does the malachim come? They knock on his door straight away and say, "You're destroyed, my friend. That's it, you're out." And we started from them. It's a shock to the system for them, and that's why it says, Bilo Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed the rest of the people, V'loi Chamal, but he also didn't have compassion for the tzaddikim who you would have thought that he had. It's not actually so obvious that was the problem of the Talmidei Chacham at the time. I looked at the Mashal in Gittin, which discusses the story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. I'm not going to go through the story. Everyone knows it, that he invites him to the party and he threw him out. And the Gemara says that the Rabbanon didn't say anything, therefore that's what caused the man to go to the emperor, and the whole story carried on. The Mashal says, why didn't the Rabbanon say anything? Either they actually didn't feel they physically could. They wanted to criticize, maybe they just didn't feel they had the power. Or they wanted, as I was always told the story, they wanted to chanfer up to the people. They were rich people in the party. The rabbis wanted to be on their side, which is a very different kind of criticism of the Rabbanon. This is one pshat. He says it's because they didn't criticize at all. The Mashal says it's because they felt, well, if I criticize this man who's making the party, he won't give me so much money for my daughter's wedding. I'm making the wedding soon, I need the money as well. Which is a very different criticism as well. And the Al-Sheikh also, in Pasuk Tes, Tavu va'aretz sha'areha ibeid v'shibab ruicheha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sunk the gates of Yerushalayim, because originally when Shlomo HaMelech built the Aron, he added in loads. But Shlomo HaMelech, he embellished the Beis HaMikdash where halakhically he was allowed to. Look at his kiyar. His kiyar was massive, right? And all the bulls below it. That was never in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. If you go, I just took a tour to the Alhambra in Spain. And you go to the Lion Palace, which is a beautiful palace in the middle. You'll see 12 lions with a basin in the middle. And many people say that was built by someone called Yosef Ibn Naglera, the son of Shmuel Ibn Naglera, who lived there, who built that based on what the Sea of Solomon was like in the Beis HaMikdash. Shlomo HaMelech embellished the Beis HaMikdash. And also, he built a cover around the Aron. But the Aron was exactly the same measurement as the gates of the Beis HaMikdash. When he had the cover, the Chazal tell us he couldn't put it in. So by a miracle, Su'u Sha'arim Rasheichem, the gates lifted themselves up with a nest, and then the Aron could come in. So now when the Babylonians came to destroy, the gates sunk into the ground out of recognition that they had been mechabed the Torah all those years before. Where was the Aron? That's also a discussion. It was already hidden underground. That's other Pesukim and Novi, where the Aron was. But the gates were sunk into the ground. But why? How does that? I wondered actually when I learned this, just before I saw the Al Sheikh, how does that come in with all the criticism? How does it fit in? And then it says, "Ve'ein Torah" in the pasuk. Malkah v'sareha v'agayim ein Torah. There's no Torah. That means once they're out into exile, there's no Torah. The gates have sunk into the ground. That's point number one. There's got to be some connection with this. And also, the Jews have gone. There's no Torah. That's not true. Bava, we learned Gemara, the Talmud Bavli, much more than the Talmud Yerushalmi. And we know we have a lot of criticism today's Dor. We're so far from Hasinai and Yuridus Hadoras. But everyone agrees that the Torah learning now is the best it's been in Golos. We have yeshivas, koilim. You know, some people here would say there are too many or too little. That's a discussion, but we definitely are not short of it. And people say they're not genuine either. But there's loads of people going through Shas hourly throughout the world. We're doing pretty well considering that we're 2,000 years on from any clear recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Beis Hamikdash, right? What does it mean, Ein Torah? So it says the Al-Sheikh, the way he explains the whole parak, that's always a conversation between, a represented conversation between Klal Yisrael and Hashem. And the Pasuk, he says, from what I understand he means, starts like this. The Klal Yisrael say to Hashem, Tavuvara Shareha, you're very busy looking after the dignity of these gates. They sink into the ground because they honored the Aron by being lifted up all those years ago. What about Malkah v'Sareha v'Goyim, the actual Talmidei Chachamim themselves? Why are they all getting killed? On that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds, Ein Torah. They're not genuine Talmidei Chachamim, those people. Not that they are, but they don't criticize. It's a third way of understanding. Not that they want to suck up to the people. They do bittul Torah, says the Al-Sheikh. They walk around, they don't do much. They're nowhere near pushing themselves. They don't respect the Torah properly. And these are the tzaddikim. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds to them, you want to know why I respected the gate? And let it sink, because the gate was a genuine act of kavod HaTorah. He saw the Aron come and he lifts himself up in a dramatic way of allowing the Aron in. Says the Al-Sheikh, the Talmidei Chachamim, Hashem responds, Ein Torah. That's not what I call Torah. And that's why they're going to be destroyed, which is another reason why the Talmidei Chachamim were shocked. Again, they're sitting in the house. Maybe they went to Seder late, or they made a few too many coffees, I guess, when they were learning. But then the destruction started from them because of bittul Torah. And I'll leave off with Pasuk Yud Zayin, which is just a bit of comfort just before we stop. Asa Hashem Asher Zaman Bitzaim Rasai. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did exactly what he had said, like I started off the Sheh in Parshas Bechu Koisa, and everything was destroyed. So the Torah Temiba points out, he brings the Medrash, the words of the Pasuk are Bitzaim Rasai. He carried out the decree. Mishash Am HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'mad Eilu Lo Sishmeru Li V'alachti Af Ani Imachem V'keri Shem HaKach Asa. Did HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually fulfill all the decrees that he had told the Jewish people they'll get in Parshas Bechai? Say no. Bitzaim Rasa. He cooled it down, which is an expression which I couldn't find the source for it, of compromise. HaKadosh Baruch Hu maybe gave half of what he'd said he would do. Because the Gemara Sanhedrin, he says, I didn't look it up, so I don't know where it's from. He's right. Where's the Gemara? And what's the expression of the Gemara? To break, right, okay, to break bread. Of course, Bitzaim Rasai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu broke it into two. He actually didn't keep it. Which fits in to the famous Gemara in Gittin. Amar Reish Lakish, Bashar Shenichetzu Goyim Lehecho, when the Babylonians came in, they saw the Kruvim hugging each other. And they made fun of the Jewish people. They thought it was immorality. It represented to them Avodah Zarah. They didn't realize the Kedusha that was associated with it. That it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in love with Klal Yisrael, right? So they asked, they said to the Jews, and they started becoming immoral themselves, says the Gemara. They thought the whole thing is one big joke. Please, look, and they've got an idol right in the center and an immoral idol. And immorality and idol worship were always associated, as we know from Baal Pa'ar. And they said, you know what? Ah, this is a joke. But then everyone, the Ritva asked the question, but why were they hugging each other? This is the time when no one, even the Talmidei Chachamim, we've said the whole Sheh were the worst level possible. There was the three cardinal sins, yet the Kruvim were hugging. That's the famous question. Why were the Kruvim hugging each other? So the Babylonians didn't like it, and they made fun of it. But surely the Chazal tell us always that when they would lift up to see the Kruvim, and if they would be hugging, it means HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves them. So I saw this, and someone had quoted with the B'nai Soska, I don't know if it's a famous answer or not, but he says when a person goes away in Hilchas Nidah, there are Vestas, right? Which means you have to separate from your wife in the time of month that she would normally become Nidah, right? So if it's 30 days and people got 31, then there's Vesta Haflaga. That's not the context to discuss it now, but that's the halacha of Vestas. Are they Drabbanan or Daraisa? There is a big part of Hilchos Taras HaMishpacha is working out the calendar and the Vestas. But still, some of the halachas are relaxed just before a husband goes away. Because before a husband goes away, there's an understanding the husband and wife will want to be with each other. So definitely most of the halachas may be bigger, but things are pushed away simply because now the husband's going away. And which shows us the importance of a wife being together with the husband just before he goes away. Because that's when, says the B'nai Yischar, you don't see someone's love in their house when they're there the whole time. But when you go to the airport and someone's seeing someone off, then everyone feels for their kids, everyone starts crying and hugging, and you walk right till the gate, and you try and climb over just because they're going for now for 2 weeks. You don't see that on a regular Tuesday afternoon when someone's doing the school run. Everyone's just arguing. But at the time when everyone's going, then everyone is feeling that point. So it says very beautifully, as far as I understand what the B'nai Yischar is saying, it's the same with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even though we were sinning. But in the depth of what it was, HaKadosh Baruch Hu understood, Bitzai and Rasai, we're going to compromise it. This is because you have to go. It's definitely not something I'm desperate to do. And even so, we'll give you one last parting hug, which is represented by the krovim next to each other. So in a way, he broke his own rules. Well, we're going to go now. Till the third Beis HaMikdash, there'll be maybe thousands of years. I want you to go from an act of love, an act of deep love from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, on Tisha B'Av, sometimes we have a happy mood because we see our suitcases packed in the hallway and the tickets are waiting, not anymore on top, but on our phones, and everything is booked. And you feel guilty for feeling that bit happy, and I guess maybe you should be. Already in the afternoon, everyone's got their shyness. Can I start washing, or if I have to go? And everyone's long forgotten, maybe the bit of the positive energy that we have comes from the Moed of Tisha B'Av, from the Kruvim facing each other as well. So maybe you don't have to feel so guilty. Feeling a bit of a good mood Tisha B'Av afternoon, maybe it's not necessarily the fact that you know, Marbella beckons and you're going to travel there and your EasyJet flights are booked. It could be also simply because there's an element of the Moed of the Yom Tov that's coming out, which is even though it was the lowest point of the destruction, the Kruvim were facing each other. And we feel, so to speak, the Hag of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that would leave us throughout exile. And that is Pasuk Yitzayin, Asa Hashem Hashem, Mamba Bitsa Emrosai. It was only compromise, which is also represented by the Kruvim as well. Shkoyach, everyone. Shkoyach. Thank you.
Aber ich glaube, dass ich schon immer was habe und ich brauche nur Sache ist, dass es so viel noch für Abraham zu tun ist. Nehmen wir, also ich hoffe, ich bin mal ein Schreiber, 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 ich bin mal ein Schreiber,